John Batchelor, johnbatchelorshow.com, ABC Radio, the Lebanon Front, the Gaza Front, the Afghan Front, the Iraq Front. What unites them is that these are proxy wars fought, my opinion, between the United States of America and its enemies in the Oman, especially the Islamic Republic of Iran. But we could be looking at the same situation that Europe and the United States saw in 1936, when, in a revolution launched by the officer corps in Spain, the fall of the government and the intervention of both the Nazis, Germany, and its ally, Italy, against the intervention of, half-heartedly, the Russians, the communists. And also interplaying were the British interests, the French interests, everyone else. That's a proxy war. And I am speaking with a man who has written of proxy war because he lived through it wearing three different hats. Bill Mara, William Mara, his book from the Naval Institute Press is Contra Cross, Insurgency and Tyranny in Central America, 1979 to 1989. He arrives in 1979 in Central America as a college boy, and an earnest one to boot. He's looking to network with missionaries to do important work in Central America. He speaks Spanish. He's now a foreign service officer serving in old Europe in London for the United States. Bill, congratulations and good evening. I want you to see, as for my audience, what you saw as a young man, 1979, arriving in Central America with your gifts. What was the challenge, and did you understand at that moment that you had just walked into a proxy war?
I think I did, John. And it's a pleasure to be with you tonight. And yeah, I think we did from the very beginning realize that we were dealing with proxy wars. Proxy wars that were being fought as proxy wars on both sides. The communists that were fighting in Central America were working through local proxies, but we always, I think, recognized that ultimately we were dealing with agents of the Soviet Union. On our side, we were working through local forces in an effort to in El Salvador to stop a communist revolution, and in Nicaragua to support a revolution against communist tyranny. And I think we discovered many of the challenges and many of the problems that come up when you work with surrogates, when you're involved in a proxy war. For example, in El Salvador, we were dealing with military forces that had values that were far different from what we were accustomed to. For example, in the human rights area, I was a U.S. Army officer, and we had been brought up with some very strict guidance on...
This is several years on, because Bill joined the U.S. Special Army and then became Special Forces officer and then was tasked to Central America after 85. Continue, Bill.
That's right, yeah. And so I arrive in El Salvador, and I was part of the U.S. military group there assisting and advising the Salvadorans in their struggle against the communists. And we immediately discovered big cultural differences, institutional cultural differences and societal cultural differences between us and the Salvadorans. We had a common purpose in fighting the communists, but there were lots of differences in the way we went about doing things and the way we saw things. So I think one of the big challenges that faces anybody involved in proxy war is the linguistic cultural barriers that they have to overcome. For example, in El Salvador, the forces that we were dealing with had very, very different attitudes towards human rights than U.S. forces did. And any advisor who was there immediately knew that he was working with a force that did not necessarily share our respect for human rights. We had to find ways of dealing with that, ways that were consistent with our values and consistent with the moral values of the American people, yet at the same time allowed us to continue to work with our proxies to achieve our overall objective in El Salvador.
I'm speaking with Bill Mara. He's a Foreign Service officer now. His previous hats included Special Forces tasked to fight in a proxy war in Central America. And before that, he was working with missionaries. And Bill, I'm interested in your motivation, because the frustration level of feeling that you've been forgotten by Washington, and yet you have this enormous challenge, and that everyone in the area, everyone around you, sees you as the all-powerful Americans. And you think to yourself, if they only knew. I want to go back before you wore the uniform, when you were there with the missionaries. You mentioned one whom you worked with or knew passably was murdered the following summer after you left. Is that correct?
That's right, John. Yeah, I was with a very, very nice group of Catholic missionaries in the mountains of Guatemala. They were wonderful people, and they were working very, very hard to educate very poor Indian kids in the mountains.
And he was murdered because of why, Bill? And what did that teach you? Because we've got a lot of young people listening, and they're trying to figure out their value system. The value system of the wider world is it fair-minded of me to project? What did you learn in 79 or 80 when you learned that that brother had been murdered?
I learned that military forces in other parts of the world don't behave the way U.S. military forces would or are trained to behave. And I think he was killed by paramilitary forces up there because of a very simple-minded perception on their part that anybody who was working to educate poor Indian kids had to be with leftist forces. That was not the case with him. I knew him, and I knew he was not at all associated with the communists, but they took a very simplistic and almost troglodytic view of the world, and they branded him as an enemy simply because he was attempting to educate poor Indian kids. And it was a real travesty, a tragedy and a great loss for that country. And it alerted me to the fact that when you step into a foreign country, the values environment that you're working in is not at all what you're looking at back home. And it's almost like the line from the movie, "We're not in Kansas anymore."
Now, Bill has in his book anecdotes that are perfect army. For example, the reason he was tasked to Central America. I think, is it fair to summarize this as that you were being punished because you were a wise guy, Bill? Is that it?
No, I don't think that was it. I think that I was a little bit outside the mold, John. I think I was interested in some things that weren't necessarily mainstream army.
Well, for heaven's sakes, Bill, you could speak Spanish. What does that mean? I mean, they didn't like that.
Well, that gets to one of the points that I make in the book. I think that's one of the things we have to recognize about our military. Our military is superb and is great at destroying enemy military forces, but it's not necessarily very good at the touchy-feely, cultural, linguistic skills that are needed to deal with insurgency and counterinsurgency and proxy wars. It's almost a completely different skill set, and I think in many ways it's unfair to expect our soldiers to be good at everything. It's almost like we expect them to be both the War Corps and the Peace Corps at the same time, and in my experience, that really just doesn't work. And if I was somebody who was working in the Army, I was interested in cultural linguistic skills, I was interested in getting into what was going on in the Central American countries, and I realized very quickly that inside the U.S. Army, I was in an institution that was interested in none of those things and actually viewed those things with great skepticism and great suspicion because they were seen as these touchy-feely soft skills and almost contrary to the warrior ethos that they were trying to encourage.
Right. This is the mid-1980s, Ronald Reagan's 1 and 2 administration, and the contest was between the two big creatures on the planet, the Soviet Union, then failing, although not obvious, and the United States of America. And let's go to 1986 when you arrive back in Salvador, this time wearing special forces. You're a Green Beret.
You're a greenie,
and you live between the hotels, and you're in San Salvador itself, and you were tasked to train the Salvadorian militia, their military, to give them values. And how was that for you, Bill?
Well, it was an uplifting and rewarding experience, and I really looked back on it with great fondness. So I was proud of what we did, and I was proud of what the United States did there, John. We were attempting to change, to modify. We were intervening in the internal affairs of the Salvadoran military, trying to convince them to abandon the violations of human rights that they'd been carried out before. We were trying to get them to clean up their act. We were trying to teach them that the only way that they could win this war was to win the hearts and minds of their own people, and that required them to abandon the really hideous human rights practices that they've been carrying out until then. I think we had some great success there. I think we did turn some people around. We at least made them realize that they couldn't get away with it when we were in the neighborhood. And I think that was a great achievement. I think it points out the good work that can be done by Americans who intervene, who have the proper skills. Almost everybody at U.S. Military Group when I was there, almost everybody was very, very fluent in Spanish. We had a really good set of people. We did it with only 55 U.S. military advisors. Imagine that. We dealt with a really deadly, powerful insurgency very close to our borders. And by working through local forces with people who knew what they were doing, who had the language skills, we were able essentially to stop it with 55 guys. I think that's a lesson that has a lot of relevance in today's situation.
I'm speaking with William R. Mara. Contra Cross is the book from the Naval Institute Press, Insurgency and Tyranny in Central America, 79 to 89. Bill has the privilege of having three hats in Central America. Once as a college student working with missionaries, second time as a Green Beret Special Operations arriving in Salvador, and the third time as a Foreign Service officer arriving in Honduras, March of 88, which is a month before the what looks to be staged attack on the embassy while you were present. And let's speak of Honduras and the threat to it at this point. This is still the same proxy war. Do I read you correctly, Bill?
That's right. This is a different front on the war. In Honduras, we were assisting Nicaraguan forces that were attempting to overthrow. They were working out of Honduras, attempting to overthrow a communist.
The Contras, we called them.
The Contras. The Nicaraguan resistance were the Contras. That's right. And the United States there was in a very different role from what it was doing in El Salvador. in Nicaragua, we were actually assisting insurgents. We were propelling an insurgency and helping insurgents work to overthrow a tyrannical communist government, the Sandinistas. And my job as an embassy officer was to carry out essentially diplomatic functions, but with an insurgent group. So it was diplomacy with a guerrilla twist, if you will, John.
And you were contact man. You could speak Spanish or a Green Beret, and so you became the interlocutor between those contras in the jungles, wherever they were, and the Foreign Office in Washington.
That's right. That was my job. My job was to go to the field and to spend time with them, to understand them, to get to know them as people, to get to know them as leaders, to evaluate them as an organization, and to report back to Washington on what I was seeing. And so it was a fascinating opportunity for somebody who was interested in Latin America. It was also frustrating. I'd say it was more frustrating than dealing with the Salvadorans, because our policy with the Contras was far more controversial. And I think one of the most frustrating things about it was the inability of many Americans on both sides of the political spectrum, both liberals and conservatives, to understand a group as different from us as the Contras were. The Contras were ordinary Central American peasants who had risen up against tyranny. They didn't understand. They didn't have advanced degrees. They didn't have the New York Times Sunday magazine to tell them what the world looked like. But they experienced communism firsthand, and they hated it. And they violently reacted against it, and they rose up in rebellion against their communist masters.
Let's tell the story of one, Wilfredo. There's a good example of. What do you remember best of him, Bill?
Now, Wilfredo was a very quiet, soft-spoken guy. He was sort of the antithesis of the Latin Frito Bandito, and he had suffered a very serious wound. Many of the Contras I worked with were seriously wounded. He was still in the process of recovering from a gunshot wound to the back, and he was a very honest man, and one of the things I did when I was in the Contra base camps was I would ask them to come by my tent. I lived in a tent out there, and I would ask some of the commanders to come by after dinner, and we'd sit around, and I'd break out some American cigarettes and make some coffee, and we'd sit around and we'd talk, and that was a very important thing. We'd talk all through the night, and they would tell me their stories. And there was one incident with Wilfredo in which these were very tough, macho guys, but after he talked about it for a while, you'd hear his voice crack with emotion, and he would start talking about the people who'd been lost, the members of his family who'd been lost, the guys who died in agony deep inside Nicaragua because there was no helicopters to come and get them out. And for me, it was a real strong connection to the reality, the horrible reality of this war. And it made me realize how deeply committed these people were and the enormous sacrifice that they had made for their freedom, because they did not want to live under communism. John, one of the most frustrating things about the whole thing was the inability of Americans, and again, I say on both sides of the political spectrum, to really understand that. I think they looked down at Nicaragua, and they looked down at these people. They did not believe that these folks were really capable of great nobility. They did not believe that these people were willing to sacrifice everything for the future of their children, the future of their country. They were, but because of this cultural gap, because of our sometimes inability to understand and appreciate what's going on across that big cultural linguistic divide, I think both sides of the political spectrum really missed it on the Contras.
Bill Mara is the son of a New York City policeman, and that's important to my friends, Bill. He served as the principal and American consul in the Azores in Portugal 2000 to 2003. He's now a foreign service officer in Old Europe and London. The book, The Proxy War in Central America, Contra Cross, Insurgency and Tyranny in Central America, 1979 to 1989. This is John Batchelor, johnbatchelorshow.com, ABC Radio.